Well, thank you. Thank all of you for sharing. Thank you, first of all, Eliza, Caroline, and Sarah for culturing us a little bit. I think we could use a little more of that at Nexus. So, like, we got some cultured there. And the reason I asked Stephen Christie and Warren to share is because they've modeled for me so many times what it means to be generous and hospitable, and I thought I'd have them share first because I'm not going to talk out of a posture of someone who does generosity and hospitality very poorly. It's not my cup of tea, and yet it's been modeled to me by so many people here, and so I'm coming at this morning wanting to share with you why I do hospitality and generosity poorly, and hoping that you will resonate with some of my struggles. You see, part of me sort of begins here. Why? Why is it so important to be generous and hospitable? And I was drawn to Paul's words. He wrote a letter to a young pastor named Timothy. And he's sharing his wisdom with Timothy. He's telling him how to sort of learn the ropes of what it means to lead a church community. And Paul says this to him about the people in the church, and I think it's telling in this regard. It starts out this way. Command those who are rich. I don't want to pause there for a second, because when I read scripture, here is what generally happens to me. When I encounter a line like this, I tend to think, excellent, perfect. Preach it, Paul, to the rich people. Give it to them. Let's here lay the smackdown on the rich people. The weird thing is this, is whenever I read about the rich people in scripture, I never consider myself rich. That's not my problem. A lot of times going through life, I just never consider myself rich. I certainly don't feel rich. But for this morning, let me ask this of you. Let's just assume with this passage that we're all, or many of us, are under the umbrella of rich here. Because then I think it sort of sheds some light on the importance of generosity and hospitality. So he says this, command those who are rich in this present world and at Nexus not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. To those of us who are rich, to many of us in this room, make sure we're being generous and willing to share. And I love the larger point that Paul makes at the end. Why? Why do we be generous, practice hospitality? Why do we share? Because essentially what Paul is saying this, particularly in the last line, is this. Living generously is the best possible way to live. Of all the ways to live, being generous is the best possible way to live. But for me, I can be convinced in my head that it's the best possible way to live, but I find it incredibly difficult and hard to live that way. Why? Well, back to the Anasazi. I think they draw it all home for us. Drought and violence. If you've been following along with this series, we've been unpacking the ancient mystery of these people from the 13th century. They mysteriously vanished. And what we've discovered so far in this series is that right before they vanished, their world had gone to hell. There was a severe drought in the region. No food. Food was scarce. People were starving, and it turned into brutal violence. Their world had become incredibly violent. Archaeological evidence suggests that entire settlements and towns had been massacred. And so before these people disappeared, what we know is that food was scarce, and enemies were everywhere. And it was a harsh and hostile world. The question is, how do you live in a harsh and hostile world? What do you do? How do you respond when resources are scarce and the threat of thievery is everywhere? What you do is this, you hoard and you hide. What archaeologists have discovered is this, the 20 or so years before their great vanishing act, it seems as if the Anasazi became obsessed with hoarding and hiding. We've already seen that with their cliff dwellings. But one of the most prominent techniques that the Anasazi used for hiding was to build what they called granaries. And granaries are simply these round things that they stored food in, corn, seeds, other things that would not perish if they were stored well in granaries. They built them in places that were so inaccessible that to try to steal from the Anasazi, you would have to risk your life. I mean, take a look at where some of these granaries are placed. I've put some arrows on some of them because it's hard to see them. Sheer rock face, we're storing our food in the rock face. Next slide. Hey, honey, could you get some corn? All right, I'll be right back. I just have to rock climb. Or next one. I could only get this one with the book title on it because it's a great book. But look at that place where they're storing food. I mean, this is insanity to me. Don't get our food. We're going to make it so hard for you to get, we're going to hide it so you can barely see it. If you do spot it, you will have to rock climb, risk your very life just to get some corn from us. I mean, no wonder these people have a reputation as being history's greatest rock climbers. This is crazy. And living in their world, the world of scarcity and violence, I think it makes a certain sort of sense. Let's hoard and hide. Because here's the thing, if you live in a world of scarcity, if you live in a story of scarcity, this is always the way the story plays out. Hoard and hide. But here's the thing. We don't live in a world of immediate danger or scarce resources, and yet we so often find ourselves trapped by what I would say call a scarcity mindset. And over the years, I've come to think this is one of the greatest challenges, I think, to spiritual formation, particularly to generosity and hospitality. It's a scarcity mindset. Here's how Brené Brown describes scarcity in her book, Daring Greatly. We get scarcity because we live it. Scarcity is the never enough problem. Scarcity thrives in a culture where everyone is hyper aware of lack. Everything from safety and love to money and resources feels restricted or lacking. We spend inordinate amounts of time calculating how much we have, want, and don't have, and how much everyone else has, needs, and wants. I believe this is a massive, massive challenge for our day and our age. Instead of living into the Christian path, living into the Christian story, so often I think we're tempted to travel the scarcity path, live into the scarcity story, which tells us always this: you are not enough, and you don't have enough, and the things you do have are not good enough. And when we live into this story, travel this path, our propensity is the same as the Anasazi: hoard and hide. For many of us, I think our primary struggle in life is feeling like we don't have enough. And here's the thing. When you feel like you don't have enough, being generous or hospitable is an incredibly hard practice. And what I want to do is highlight ways the scarcity story makes it hard to be generous and hospitable. I'm going to share my own struggles here. Because I find this practice of perhaps all we've talked about, I find this one very, very difficult. And I hope by sharing my own sort of struggles that maybe you can identify with some of that. So let's start with the most awkward of them. Let's talk about money, because that's always fun. But the scarcity story is so often at play with money. I mean, if I were to ask you, I won't ask you to put up your hand, but if I were to ask you, who here has enough money, I would be shocked if more than a few of you put up your hands. Who has enough money? We never have enough money. I remember the first time Kristen and I went to a financial planner, and man, was that quite the experience. We had just had Zoe's, just had our first kids, and we were thinking, you know, we should be adults by now. We should probably start having like a plan for life, get things together in order. And so we went to this financial planner. We were feeling like, hey, we're not in debt right now. Maybe we have enough money to start thinking about the future. And this experience with the financial planner was just so deflating. The first question he asked, sit down, what are your plans for the future? First thing was, do you have life insurance? Does anyone here sell life insurance? Don't tell me if you did, actually. Don't tell me if you do. Do you have life insurance? You could die. You want to leave money behind for your family. We're like, no, we don't have life insurance. Huh, okay, so we're going to have to pay for that. And then, of course, there's the option, right? You can have the I care moderately about my family option, or I really love my family. How much is the really love my family option? A lot more. Okay. All right. So let's go for that, because I don't want them to just cover my funeral. I want them to feel like they were loved. All right. Next thing, retirement. You putting away for retirement? No, I'm like, I'm planning on living off of Kristen. That's my plan. Well, no, you got to put away for retirement. Ah, okay, there's more money. That's got to go there. And then I remember he said, because Zoe was like 6 months, she was sitting there in the car seat. The guy said to us, he said, do you have any aspirations for your kids? And I remember Kristen started going off right away. Oh, yes, of course. We want our kids to go to university, get an education, blah, blah, blah. And I just sat silent the whole time because in my head, all I was thinking is this. My aspiration for my kids is that they would stop costing me money as soon as possible. Like, what is the plan? Like, all of this is starting to sound expensive. Just when will they stop costing me money? So there's more for that. And then, on top of that, he says, now, I've seen your bank account. That's not going to work. We're going to need to get that up to $10,000. So you're always holding $10,000. And I'm like, are you crazy? If I have $10,000 in my bank account, I am going on vacation. It's just, I'm like, why? Why do I need that much money? It's like, what if you get fired? You need to cover yourself for 3 months. If your roof goes, if your furnace goes, you need money, money, money to be able to cover that stuff. And you should be saving away for travel. What about renovations? I left that meeting going, oh, I thought I had enough. Clearly, I don't have enough money. I don't have enough money. And to me, this is what makes the practice of being generous with our money so incredibly difficult. It's very difficult to give your money away when you always think you don't have enough. And the scarcity story reminds us over and over again, you don't have enough money. And even if you do have enough money, that means you're probably not worrying enough about your future. You need to be thinking about retirement, kids' education, the roof, the furnace. You should be saving for this and that. On and on it goes. And I'll be honest, for me, what makes generosity so hard is that I'm constantly battling the scarcity narrative. I don't have enough. On Kristen's last mat leave, she extended her mat leave at the end, so she was off an additional 4 months, which means she wasn't getting EI. So things were tight. And I remember I was looking, okay, things are a little tighter. So I'm looking through our bank account, going through there. And I'm very ashamed to say, I was looking for ways to save money. And I remember going through our expenses, and the very first impulse I had was that, well, if things get tight, I can cut our charitable giving. That was my very first impulse. And what bothered me about my impulse was that generosity, in my mind, was the first thing to be expendable. My first impulse was not this. Well, I could cut Netflix for a few months. No, that didn't cross my mind. My first impulse was not, I could eat out less. I could walk more instead of driving. I could cut out those fancy craft beers. Like, in fact, I could cut out drinking beer. That wasn't my first impulse. My first impulse was, well, generosity is the first thing to go. And what it revealed to me is where I actually think an abundant life lies. Apparently think Netflix and craft beer and eating out give me more of an abundant life than being generous. And it bothered me that that was my first impulse. Because the scarcity story tells us generosity is something you do if you have enough money, but the scarcity story is always also telling us you will never have enough money. And so there's a contradiction there. And so we have this challenge, this scarcity story we can live into, or we can choose to live into the Christian story that tells us that the best way to live is by being generous. That I find difficult to live into. And generosity is about much more than just money. We've talked about hospitality a lot this morning. It's about being generous with our time, with our energy, with our homes, with our tables. This is why we see hospitality here at Nexus as a huge part of generosity. Sharing our money is one thing. Sharing our table is quite another. And I have to be honest, I struggle with hospitality as well. I'm really not good at it. And I particularly struggle with this for two reasons. The first is because I'm introverted. And whenever I say that, people are like, yeah, right, you speak in front of people. So I always feel like I have to give you my introvert credentials, right? Like sort of, here's my credentials. 2 summers ago, Kristen went away for 10 days with the kids. So I was on my own. And I left the house once. And that was to see a movie by myself. And it was the greatest 10 days of my life. It was just man, I really entertained myself the whole time. It was just great. I'm introverted. Or I was just telling some friends yesterday, if I have a Friday or Saturday night open, available, my first impulse is never would it cross my mind to pick up the phone or email someone and say, hey, what are you doing tonight? I'll be like, well, I guess I'm going to be alone. That's just fine by me. So I have some introvert credentials for you. But this is a challenge for me with hospitality. Because here's the thing, and I'm preaching as one of us introverts. But here's the thing. Introverts, we have to stop hiding behind our introversion as an excuse for not being hospitable. Because let's be honest, introverts, some of us use it, I use it, as an excuse to not be generous with our homes and our time, and we need to call that for what it is. It's an excuse. Second, I find hospitality hard because I'm ashamed of my home at times. If you come to my home, the floor is crooked. You put a ball on the floor and it rolls. It's crooked. Things are falling apart. If you use my bathroom, if you need to use the bathroom, you will go into the bathroom and there's a washer and dryer right beside the toilet. So the running joke is, hey, could you do some laundry while you're in there? It's getting old. Well, the reality is this. I'm a bit ashamed of my home. The layout doesn't make sense to me. I mean, compared to other homes, my house oftentimes feels like it's not good enough for hospitality. And isn't that the interesting thing? That's where that lie comes in, the scarcity story. It's not good enough. But that's a lie. Here's the thing. If you have a roof over your head, that is a gift. A gift. Pure gift. And you don't have to have a nice home to practice hospitality. And so I'm challenged by this practice. Because there are competing narratives in this world. The scarcity story is a powerful one. It is a story that's been playing out for millennia. And it's easy to get caught up in the scarcity story. It will tell us always, you're not enough. You don't have enough. The things you have aren't good enough. And it's a story motivated by fear and shame. And it keeps us from being generous. It keeps us from being hospitable. But there's another story. Another path. Christian path says exactly the opposite. To be generous and hospitable is part of living a life of vitality. And so, I'm going to ask the band to come because I'm going to end with a challenge and an invitation that's going to be awkward. And I'm preaching to myself here. Please know that. I walked myself through these questions earlier this week. It gave me a sense of anxiety. So, first is this. Generosity. Would you consider increasing your charitable giving? I'm just going to ask it straight out. Here's the thing. We never talk about money at Nexus, like to a fault. We don't talk about it. Would you consider increasing your charitable giving? Would you consider starting to give or increasing how much you give? This is not just a plea for Nexus. It could be Nexus. It could be other charitable organizations. But more important than what your answer is, what I want you to pay attention to is what's going on in your head, because I guarantee you there are two stories playing out right now. Because anytime somebody says to me, hey, would you increase your giving? The scarcity story goes in. I go, oh my goodness, are you kidding me? No, I don't have enough money. Oh, I start to get stressed out. And I don't doubt that in your head right now, there are two stories playing out as well. One saying, I don't have enough. And the other one saying, but to be generous, that's what it means to really live. Second, hospitality. Would you consider having someone you don't know that well from Nexus into your home? And again, pay attention to the narrative going on in your head. Oh, geez, that's going to be awkward. There are a number of people here who model hospitality well. Hope it's okay that I mentioned. Todd and Melissa have a great practice where they invite a couple that they know quite well over with a couple that they don't know as well. So it's not just like a first date. It's, hey, okay, if conversation is horrible, I know these people, so that can go well. Would you consider opening your home, opening your kitchen tables, your living rooms, and having someone over from Nexus you don't know that well? There are two ways to live. The scarcity story, which will always tell you, you're not enough, you don't have enough, your home, your kitchen table isn't good enough. But then there's the Christian story. It says, do you really want to live? Like, really live? Like, live the best possible way? If so, then it's going to include the practices of generosity and hospitality. And I'm going to have to wrestle with that and think about my own answers, what I'm going to do going forward with that, because it's not easy for me. But I'm going to lay the challenge at my feet and all of our feet as well. I hope you'll consider that.